Welcome back to the Epoch Times Morning Brief. If you didn't know, we're America's largest independent newspaper. It's Wednesday, July 9th, and I'm Keegan Billings. Let's get right into the headlines for today. The Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration to carry out mass job cuts. Meanwhile, AG Pam Bondi clarified her remarks on files related to the late sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. In other news, TSA is ending its decades-long policy of having passengers take off their shoes at airport security checkpoints. And in our health section today, we'll be talking about lupus. But before we get started, I want to let you know that our morning brief is also available in newsletter format. It's curated daily by the Epoch Times newsroom and arrives in your inbox at 5 a.m. Our subscribers tell us we're their top source for unbiased news. So check the link in the notes. Now let's get back to our top story. The Supreme Court yesterday lifted a lower court order that prevented the Trump administration from carrying out mass job cuts and restructuring federal agencies. The new ruling lifts a federal judge's order that temporarily stopped large-scale layoffs from moving forward while the litigation continues in the lower courts. In its lawsuit against the Trump administration, the American Federation of Government Employees said the planned reorganization of the federal government will lead to hundreds of thousands of federal employees losing their jobs. The Supreme Court said in an unsigned order that the district court blocked the government's actions based on the lower court's view that President Trump's executive order 14210 and a memorandum issued by the Office of Management and Budget were unlawful. That executive order, dated February 11th, was created to implement the Workforce Optimization Initiative of the Trump administration's Department of Government Efficiency. The order directed all agency heads to work with DOGE to reduce staffing and limit hiring. The Supreme Court opinion said that the Trump administration is likely to succeed on its argument that the executive order and memorandum are lawful, but stopped short of making an outright determination. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson dissented from the new order, which she called not only truly unfortunate, but also hubristic and senseless. Jackson said there was no basis to conclude that the district court erred in its finding that the president is attempting to fundamentally restructure the federal government. In other news, AG Pam Bondi clarified her remarks on files related to the late sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. She said that previous comments she had made were about documents related to the case, not a client list, that officials this week said was non-existent. Trump interjected in the White House meeting before Bondi started to speak, saying, quote, "Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy has been talked about for years. I can't believe you're asking a question about Epstein." Bondi then said that she wanted to clarify an interview with Fox News in February in which she was asked about the Epstein list. And she replied, quote, "It's sitting on my desk to be reviewed, along with files relating to the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr." She said that the desk comment was referring to the files and not a client list. And also referencing the videos and evidence she reviewed, she said they turned out to be child porn downloaded by Epstein and that the pornography will never see the light of day. Bondi then said that she has no knowledge about Epstein being a government agent, which was asked by a reporter. She also said that the video footage from his August 2019 death in a New York City jail showed that he committed suicide. Responding to comments that a minute was taken off the Epstein cell surveillance video counter, Bondi said that it's normal and that a minute is missing from jail footage every night. She indicated that video footage will be released to show that. Now moving on to more politics. The president unveiled plans to impose a 50% tariff on copper. The president stopped short of providing specifics such as the exact date the tariff would take effect. Speaking to CNBC's Power Lunch, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said the president's tariff will likely take effect at the end of July or on August 1st. He said that the purpose of the new tariff is to increase domestic copper production. In addition to copper, the president threatened to impose tariffs of up to 200% on pharmaceuticals imported into the U.S. However, Trump noted that these higher import duties would not take effect right away. Instead, he would give people about a year, year and a half. "We'll give them a certain period of time to get their act together," he said. Lutnick told CNBC, quote, "With pharmaceuticals and semiconductors, those studies are being completed at the end of the month. And so the president will then set his policies then, and I'm going to let him wait to decide how he's going to do it." The copper tariff follows through on the president's statement made earlier this year. In February, Trump signed an executive order directing the Department of Commerce to address threats to national security and economic stability from copper imports. He stated that he would impose a levy of up to 25% on all copper imports and urged domestic companies to increase their production of the red metal. Meanwhile, the Trump administration said it will not offer amnesty for farm laborers. In his cabinet meeting yesterday, Trump was asked to comment on remarks made earlier in the day by Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins. In a Tuesday morning press event, Rollins said that there will be no amnesty offered to illegal immigrants currently working on farms. Trump echoed her remarks, saying, quote, "There's no amnesty." And he added, quote, "What we're doing is getting rid of criminals, but we're doing a work program." The domestic agriculture industry continues to rely heavily on illegal immigrant labor. In 2001, nearly 55% of hired crop farm workers were not legally authorized to work in the U.S. That's according to the Department of Agriculture, and is up from 14% in 1991. Since 2001, that percentage has dropped to around 40%, according to the report's most recent update in January. The secretary followed up by saying that she and Trump have spoken once or twice about mass deportations. Rollins said, quote, "He has always been of the mindset that at the end of the day, the promise to America to ensure that we have 100% American workforce stands. But we must be strategic in how we are implementing the mass deportation so as not to compromise our food supply." Now let's move on to U.S. news. The renowned classical Chinese dance company based in New York, Shenyun Performing Arts, is asking a court to dismiss a civil lawsuit brought by two former performers. Lawyers for the company stated in a July 7th court filing, "The statute of limitations has passed, and the plaintiffs have failed to allege any unlawful activity," detailing several other deficiencies in the suit. If the suit were to proceed, it would outlaw common religious practices protected under the Constitution, the filing suggests. Justin Butterfield, an attorney for Shenyun with the Texas-based law firm Butterfield & Patterson, said, quote, "They're trying to turn everyday religious activity into a federal crime, and it's just not." Shenyun was founded by practitioners of Falun Gong in 2006, with a mission to revive traditional Chinese culture and raise awareness about the persecution of practitioners in communist China. The company has faced incessant harassment and sabotage attempts by the Chinese regime, including an FBI-thwarted plot to bribe an IRS official to open a probe on Shenyun. Over the past year, the company has also been targeted with more than 100 bomb and death threats, at least a dozen hit pieces in U.S. media, smears by inauthentic accounts on social media, and several lawsuits. This civil lawsuit was filed in the federal court for the Southern District of New York in April by two individuals from New Zealand who formerly performed with Shenyun. The plaintiffs alleged that performing with the company amounted to forced labor because they believed that if they left, they would go to hell. The Epoch Times previously spoke to dozens of current and former Shenyun performers who squarely rejected such an interpretation of their company culture or faith. William Lee, a principal dancer and instructor, said, quote, "I've never ever heard anyone say that if you leave, you would go to hell. I know actually many artists who did leave, and they have since started businesses or they're doing some other careers, and I keep in touch with them, and they're doing well." Ying Chen, the vice president of the company, called the suit a misguided attempt to deprecate the pursuit of excellence and discard the freedom our country affords to religious communities to live according to their faith. In a press release yesterday, Chen said, quote, "I would expect that religious schools and elite training academies across the country are watching this case very closely to see if the very foundations of their institutions, the core elements that define them and make them great, will be properly defended." Now let's move on to more U.S. news. Employees at a cloud seeding company have received death threats and calls for vandalism after the firm's chief executive officer tried to show how its rainmaking operations had nothing to do with the recent flooding disaster in Central Texas. Augustus DeRico, age 25, the CEO of Rainmaker Technology Corporation, took to X yesterday, tagging the social media safety account and head of product, Nikita Beer, stating, "Our address and pictures of our office were doxxed yesterday and the posts are still up despite being reported. Who can I talk to in order to remove this?" Several hours later, that question appeared to remain unanswered. DeRico told the Epoch Times in an email yesterday that Rainmaker is still receiving threats despite his explanation on X. He said, quote, "We have asked the platform to intervene on certain posts and will continue to explain the truth behind our operations in Texas to clear up any misunderstandings with the facts." Rainmaker conducted a scheduled cloud seeding operation on the afternoon of July 2nd in Karnes County, Texas, which is more than 150 miles southeast of Kerr County and downstream of the Guadalupe River and all other affected rivers. However, accusations quickly arose across social media attempting to connect Rainmaker's activity with the floods, including one inquiry from General Mike Flynn. DeRico, in a response to General Flynn on X, said, quote, "The natural disaster in the Texan Hill Country is a tragedy. My prayers are with Texas. Rainmaker did not operate in the affected area on the 3rd or 4th or contribute to the floods that occurred over the region. Rainmaker will always be fully transparent." DiRico's company suspended all cloud seeding operations once its forecasters identified Tropical Storm Barry making its way into the state. And in more news on the flooding in Texas, at least 109 people have died, with at least 161 people still missing. Governor Greg Abbott told reporters yesterday that these figures are likely to rise, due in part to the area's popularity with campers. Kirk County Sheriff Larry Letha said that hundreds of first responders are on the scene in flooded areas around the Guadalupe River, with local, federal, and state personnel working to recover bodies or locate missing people. The sheriff said five campers and one counselor from Camp Mystic are still missing. The camp, which is located in Hunt, confirmed Monday that at least 27 children and counselors died in the floods. Identification is pending for 19 adults and 7 children who were found dead. When asked about those who are still missing, Letha said, "It's hard to know that number. I know the numbers that we have found, and that's all I know." And once again, my heart goes out to all the people affected by this flood, and I hope they stay strong through this one. Now moving on to other news. The Transportation Secretary Administration is ending its decades-long policy of having passengers take off their shoes at airport security checkpoints. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem confirmed this yesterday. Noem announced the policy reversal at a news conference at Ronald Reagan National Airport in Washington. She said, quote, "Today we have started a new no-shoes policy. For more than 20 years, passengers have been mandated to take off their shoes to screen for explosives. The rule coming after a British passenger, Richard Reed, attempted to detonate explosives tucked into his shoes in a 2001 incident on an American Airlines flight from Paris to Miami. Reed was dubbed by the media as the shoe bomber. He is alleged to have been a member of the Al-Qaeda terrorist organization. Reed was sentenced to 3 life imprisonment terms without the possibility of parole after pleading guilty in federal court in 2002. And he's currently serving time at the ADX Florence Maximum Security Prison in Colorado. And real quick, if you're enjoying the Morning Brief, we publish Monday through Friday. It's a concise report directly from the Epoch Times editorial desk. We do it with depth and facts from both sides. That way you get to make your own opinion. So just take a moment and hit the follow button. Our team would really appreciate it. Now let's move on to world news. This one's about how the West is responding to China's weaponization of rare earth. At this year's G7 summit, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen held up a symbol of the West's bid to gain supply chain independence from China. It was a rare earth magnet. The EU chief, talking to the other heads of state, including President Trump on June 15, said, quote, "It was manufactured in Estonia by a Canadian company using raw materials sourced from Australia and supported by the EU's Just Transition Fund. The fund provides financial support for the EU's goal to achieve net zero emissions of all greenhouse gases. China accounts for 90% of the refining of the world's rare earth elements, according to the International Energy Agency. A rare earth magnet produced from an alternative supply chain is noteworthy. Heat-resistant magnets are one way these critical minerals are utilized. Rare earth elements are essential to modern manufacturing, and without them, consumers will likely face shortages of cars and electronics that rely on them for screens, batteries, and motors." According to the Department of Defense, the same goes for advanced weapon systems. An F-35 fighter jet needs more than 900 pounds of rare earth elements, and a nuclear-powered attack submarine needs more than 9,000 pounds of the metals. Rare earths are not named rare because they are scarce in the Earth's crust, but because they occur naturally at low densities and are expensive to separate from other metals. China just doesn't dominate the mining of these elements, but the entire value chain, which includes separating and refining rare earths, as well as manufacturing magnets. Based on its near monopoly, Beijing has weaponized rare earths in the U.S.-China trade war. Despite agreeing in Geneva in May and in London in June to provide the U.S. with these metallic elements, the materials are still not flowing at the same level as before Beijing imposed export controls in April. At the same time, the Trump administration is proceeding with deregulation and investment to help boost the domestic supply chain. The U.S. recognized China's dominance in critical minerals during the Obama administration in the 2010s, and during the Biden administration introduced manufacturing tax credits and federal loan assistance under the Inflation Reduction Act. Now let's move on to more world news. Vietnam has imposed anti-dumping duties on certain hot-rolled coil steel products from China. It deals a blow to Beijing's ongoing efforts to use neighboring countries as transshipment points to disguise the origin of its exports and circumvent tariffs. The new tariff, ranging from 23.1% to 27.83%, took effect on July 6 and will remain in place for 5 years. Vietnam's Ministry of Industry and Trade made the announcement on July 7th. Vietnamese officials said they had launched an anti-dumping investigation into hot-rolled steel imports from both China and India. The investigation concluded that China-made steel was being dumped on the Vietnamese market and causing significant damage to the domestic steel industry. The ministry said, quote, "There is a correlation between the dumped imports from China and damage to the domestic sector." Meanwhile, imports from India were deemed negligible in volume and impact. Based on those findings, Vietnam imposed the anti-dumping duties on China-made steel products. Among the China-based companies hit with the highest duty rate of 27.83% are some of the world's largest steel producers, including Angang Steel, Baoshan Iron and Steel, and Baotu Steel Union, all of which are state-owned enterprises. China, which produces more steel than the rest of the world combined each year, has long been criticized for flooding global markets with cheap steel and thereby weakening rival steel industries. The announcement followed a newly finalized trade agreement between Vietnam and the United States. Under the deal, U.S. goods entering Vietnam will be exempt from tariffs, while Vietnamese goods entering the U.S. will face a 20% tariff. And in more world news, the Chinese Communist regime's consulate in Odessa, Ukraine, was damaged again in a large-scale Russian airstrike. An investigation by Ukrainian authorities found that the wreckage of the drones used in the attack contained Chinese parts. On the night of July 3rd into the morning of July 4th, Russia launched a new round of large-scale airstrikes on Ukraine, causing casualties in multiple cities, including Kyiv and Odessa. According to Ukrainian authorities and media reports, the Chinese consulate general in Odessa was affected by the airstrike, with its exterior walls and glass damaged. This is the second time the Chinese consulate has been damaged in a Russian attack since July 2023. The Chinese regime, Russia's ally and major supporter of its war efforts, has not publicly condemned the Russian attack. The Ukrainian deputy foreign minister said that Ukrainian investigators found a large number of Chinese-made components in the wreckage. The head of the Foreign Intelligence Service of Ukraine said earlier this year that the Chinese regime provided Russia with mechanical equipment, special chemicals, gunpowder, and key components. He also said that as of the beginning of 2025, 80% of critical electronics for Russian drones are of Chinese origin. Despite the continued denial by the CCP of any form of military assistance to Russia, the U.S. and the EU have imposed sanctions on dozens of Chinese companies suspected of assisting Russia's military-industrial system. Now I'm going to pass it over to Helen with our health section.
Hi, folks. I'm Helen Billings, and today I'm going to talk about lupus. It's an unpredictable disease that can affect any part of the body. I'll share the signs to look out for. Lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease. The name lupus comes from the Latin word for wolf, a reference first made in the 13th century by a doctor who thought the facial lesions of the disease resembled a wolf bite. Lupus is estimated to affect about 1.5 million people in the United States. The majority of cases occur in women, particularly those between ages 15 and 44. Lupus is a perplexing illness for both doctors and patients. Its symptoms often mimic other diseases, making diagnosis difficult. Its unpredictable nature adds to the personal struggles of those living with it. Lupus symptoms vary greatly from person to person and can change over time. They often follow a pattern of flare-ups and periods of remission. The disease's unpredictable nature means not everyone experiences all symptoms, and severity can fluctuate significantly. Lupus often develops gradually, with early symptoms that can be easy to overlook. Recognizing these warning signs may help with earlier diagnosis and management. Some common early signs are 1. Extreme fatigue. This is often the first and most persistent symptom. 2. Joint pain and swelling. This commonly affects hands, wrists, and knees. 3. Skin rashes, which includes the characteristic butterfly rash across the nose and cheeks. 4. Is fevers, in particular ones exceeding 100 degrees, linked to inflammation. 5. Sensitivity to sunlight, also called photosensitivity. It can trigger rashes, fever, fatigue, or joint pain. 6. Muscle pain, often affecting the neck, thighs, shoulders, and upper arms. And 7 is headaches, which can be coupled with memory problems or confusion. As lupus progresses or becomes more active, it can affect nearly every system in the body. Symptoms often extend beyond the early warning signs, affecting major organs, appearance, and even cognitive function. Not everyone with lupus will experience all of these issues, but understanding them can help recognize when the disease may be flaring or evolving.
Thanks, Helen. And before we leave, here are some words of wisdom to start the day. Today's quote is by Florence Nightingale, the founder of modern nursing. She said, quote, "I attribute my success to this. I never gave or took any excuse." Thanks for listening to the Epoch Times Morning Brief. I'm Keegan, and I'll see you tomorrow.